Welcome back to another episode of Comic Obscura Showcase, where I take an obscure comic and give it a reboot for today. I'm your host, Tony, and this week, in case you haven't guessed, I'm actually talking about old cartoon shows, but because these shows did have comic books, it's still in line with the show, the premise of the show, so, you know, there you go. That's my end. The two cartoons are Exo Squad and Big Guy and Rusty, the Boy Robot. I think I'm going to kick things off with a little explanation of Exo Squad. So, some of you may remember this show, some even less than that, the toys, maybe both, but there was a comic as well, published under Topps Comics in 1994, but the show is the real meat and potatoes of the whole thing. So that's what we're talking about. It had 52 episodes, 2 seasons, with a third one planned, but the show was canceled before it could happen. Oddly enough, there was also plans for a live-action movie, but with the third season no longer happening, those plans were also dumped out of an airlock. Now, the show is in the far-off future between 2119 and 2121. Humans, or Terrans, have colonized Venus and Mars, making them and Earth core homeworlds of the Terran interplanetary state. Outside of this are the descendants of the exiled Terran criminals of the outer worlds who have become pirates looting space freighters from the homeworlds for survival. At the start of the series, Earth sends their entire exo fleet to counter the pirates. You know, what could possibly go wrong there, sending like your entire military force in one direction? Now, the Exo and Exo Fleet refers to the powered exoskeleton mech suits that the Space Forces use, called Exo Frames, or E-Frames for short. Some look like armored suits, and then others look like more like combat vehicles, like, you know, kind of small 1 to 2 person, like, fighters. Think along the lines of, like, the jets from Robotech that morph into suits, but smaller. Like, a lot smaller than a jet. Well, for some of them. So, there's different designs. So, while the entire space military is off fighting pirates, surprise, surprise, there is a slave revolt. Yep, apparently, time is cyclical because humans went back to having slaves again. Artificially created ones at that. These artificial humanoids called Neo Sapiens were engineered to be physically stronger and better adapted to survive the harsh environments of Venus and Mars, and were used primarily as slaves for the colonization of those planets, since, you know, we couldn't actually go there without a lot of, like, souped up technology and stuff to survive while we built stuff there and made it livable. We engineered slaves who could survive on those planets and then forced them to basically colonize the worlds for us, and then we moved in and we pretty much treated them like second class citizens after the work was done. I mean, it's like, it feels like shooting yourself in the foot, but with a double barrel shotgun instead of just a pistol. I mean, I'm sure if I went back and watched the show, maybe there was an explanation for why people were so stupid about that whole thing, but, you know, it is what it is, I guess. Yeah, so that has to be one of the dumbest ideas ever. So after being literally born into slavery, then mistreated as lesser beings despite being created to be superior, they jump on the chance to revolt. Led by a Neo-Sapien named Phaeton, they quite easily take over with little resistance. So that's Venus, Earth, and Mars are now under their control because, you know, we sent all of our, you know, our military defense force off further off into space, where even if we did try to call them back to come and save everyone, they would not get there in time. Like, they were that far off. So who will fight back? Well, the series revolves around the Neo-Sapien War from the perspective of an elite E-frame unit known as Able Squad. And let me go through a rundown of who is in La Squadra. First up, we have Lieutenant J.T. Marsh, later Lieutenant Commander J.T. Marsh. He's pretty much just generic leader guy, you know, has the weirdest looking cut I've ever, like, the hairstyles in this are really weird. Not like, I mean, okay, they're kind of horrible, but like, for an idea of what a future hairstyle would be, they look, I don't know, surprisingly more 80s metal band for the most part than he's the only one who has something that could even be considered a military cut, to be honest. But yeah, there's not much there. He's the leader guy. He's the stalwart. He's the Cyclops of this whole thing, if that makes sense, you know. But before Cyclops got cool, next up is Marsala, one of the few Neo Sapiens serving in Exofleet. Very insightful, stoic, calm, doesn't get jokes, you know, that guy. Throughout the series, he develops an emotional attachment to Nara Burns, who is another member of the squad, so I'll talk about her next. Lieutenant Nara Burns, her parents died during the Neo Sapien takeover of Venus. She becomes squad leader after Marsh's promotion, and the relationship between her and Marsala is one of the consistent plot points throughout the series, in that, there's beef about, you know, him being a Neo Sapien and, you know, her parents being killed by Neo Sapiens, but then also he kind of develops a close bond, so it's almost like will they, won't they, but actually I don't remember how that all pans out. She's the least experienced member of the team, so she's a rookie as far as being on the squad. But next up we got Lieutenant Margaret Maggie Weston, the team field mechanic. So she's that the female grease monkey character, you know, like what's her name from whichever Final Fantasy where they made Cid a girl. She's kind of like that archetype of, you know, girl who's like so obsessed with mechanical stuff, and so she's like introverted, she's kind of a loner, but then she has a crush on another member of the team, Alec DeLeon. And Alec DeLeon is the intelligence and communication specialist. He's like the second in command, sort of, or he's not the literal second in command, but he's like the right hand of JT Marsh, which is like, you know, they're buddy, I guess. Well educated in French, hooray. Next up is Sergeant Rita Torres, the actual second in command. She hates pirates. She cares about kids. Very much that lives to serve kind of mentality. Quite the opposite of the next member, Wolf Bronski. Wolf Bronski is the veteran of Able Squad, a real schlub, but with a heart of gold. He's very romantic despite his slobbish look. And he's a lover of fine art. He kind of reminds me of... he's like a space version of... what's his name? Detective Harvey Bullock from the Batman comics and the cartoon. He's like that. Just picture that guy, but like fighting in a mech suit, basically. That's pretty much what he is. Or except he's, you know, on the outside. On the inside, apparently, he's super caring and loves fine art. Next up is Kaz Takagi, he's the real rookie of the team, despite having a bit more experience than Burns. He holds everyone in high esteem, you know, he like super respects everybody, he looks up to everybody. Despite this, is often causing trouble for them because, you know, those damn rookies can't get their crap together. He latches on to Bronski as his mentor. The series would also have episodes and story arcs focused on individuals outside of Able Squad, like I believe from the perspective of the pirates. So there's some characters that they focus on who are the pirates. They actually go into some of the Neo Sapien officers, and there's a resistance cell on the homeworlds that got taken over, and they do some characters from there, and also from the C5 Jump Troop Squadron. The second season ended on a cliffhanger with a third season that, you know, never got made, so that kind of sucked. In the cliffhanger ending, the Neo Sapiens are beaten, and the humans find a clone of Phaeton. Then they're not sure what to do with it, because it's like, well, do they condemn this yet to be awakened clone for the crimes of his predecessor, or do they potentially unleash another, you know, dictator onto the universe? There was, you know, all kinds of themes going on through there. There was love, friendship, personal tragedies, space battles, and mechs. I mean, you know, what more could you want, right? I took a look at, I looked at one of the episodes, and I'd say it's kind of, it holds up fine. It's not something that I would be like I, from as a kid, I remember the story, and I remember being really super hooked into this show just because of like how much they put into the characters. And from that perspective, story wise, I think it holds up. Animation wise, it could do with a bit of a facelift, I think. But that's not what we're going to be in talking about with this pitch. I'm actually thinking this time around, the series would thrive a lot better as a comic. So the pitch for this one is going to be in comic book format. I know it seems like something that would be a cool movie, and, you know, no doubt it would be, but it would almost have to be a franchise, given how big the story is. And you could do, like, there's ways to write a movie that could be the entire first season. But if we've learned anything from, you know, Nickelodeon's attempt at that live-action Avatar, The Last Airbender movie, you kind of don't want to try to cram a large story into one, you know, hour, hour and a half film, or even a two-hour or three-hour film. It's just not a good look. And I was going to bring up, well, I'm bringing it up now, I guess, the Batman v Superman thing, where they crammed a bunch of different storylines into one movie, and that worked out super, super well. So that's kind of my defense for not making it a movie. I think it's too big for that. Now, again, you could, you know, franchise got a franchise, and you could do that and split it into three movies, but I feel like this is the kind of story that needs to keep flowing, and the wait between each movie makes me think, one, each subsequent movie might be worse than the last, and I feel like the studios would be like, if the first one was a success, I feel like studios would be looking to cut corners in certain places, and I feel like it would depreciate in value. So I think the best thing to do is to tell this story would be through comics. I mean, that's what comics are not necessarily for, but like one of the best ways to tell a long story, I feel like that would be in comic book form. You can tell so much more story and give so much more character development than in a movie. You could split it up where, like in the show, you have your stories about Able Squad, but then you could also like take a break and then tell stories from different perspective. You can tell full stories about new characters who are, you know, from the pirate's perspective, characters from the Neo-Sapien perspective, and anyone else that's, you know, in that universe. You could kind of jump around that way and kind of give the universe, you know, make it larger, expand the lore and everything. On the other hand, you could revive it as a cartoon series again too. But my concern with that is that it'll end up getting a facelift that looks like the kind of in line with the Netflix She-Ra series and that Voltron series. The thing is, I love Voltron, the Netflix Voltron series, but I don't think that kind of look would serve this series. I feel like it should have that kind of gritty, dirty look that kind of only traditional animation gives you. Or, I mean, I guess you could throw a grain filter over it or something like that if you want to be cheap. But it shouldn't have that smooth, CGI, clean look, you know? Like, if you can find, like, you know, I guess go on YouTube, you can probably find clips of it. You'll see what I mean. Like, it's a war, and it's like one of those, it's kind of like I almost want to say Starship Trooper kind of universe, but actually I'm thinking more of original Star Wars trilogy, that kind of lived in kind of world. Like the cartoon kind of, you kind of get a sense of that, but you know, it's that cartoon was the animation, that cartoon was sort of clean, but I guess if you're watching it on like an old box TV, there's, you know, it kind of has a gritty look to it. So, you know, but animation just doesn't look that way anymore, is kind of my point for the most part. So I kind of don't have a lot of faith that someone opting to make a new anime series would understand that. I know that kind of seems unfair to jump to that conclusion, but just looking at how most animation looks nowadays, it would probably, I feel like they would go for that super clean kind of flat, vibrant palette where, okay, granted, they do use kind of bright colors in it, but they're also kind of muted. Like, if you can find a pic of it, you'll kind of see what I mean. So I think that a comic would kind of be the best way to go. Like, I just kind of have more faith in a successful comic run than anything else. Since this is a war story / space opera / sci-fi series, there are plenty of themes to play with, and I think you could get some good stories from different people without losing the main story. New characters can be introduced, you can push in some newer themes that maybe weren't in the original show or concepts, and you can still have your main story. Now, a comic relaunch could lead to a new cartoon or movie, but by then, hopefully someone would do it justice if they picked it up. But the comic, I think, should start from the beginning and do the story that leads up to the war with Neo Sapiens, then go into the war itself, and then follow through with the aftermath. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the story they originally planned for the third season of the show, but it could, or they could go in a different direction and do something that, you know, it's after concluding the story with the new writers and artists or whatever who's doing this comic, you could take it off in a different direction or follow through with the original plan that would have been the third season. I think the look should move a bit away from the cartoony look, because the cartoon did do that kind of realistic human, like, kind of think G.I. Joe, the old G.I. Joe cartoon look. But I think, like, if for this comic, I think the artist should kind of push, I think for an artist, they should push for someone who has obviously good good anatomy, more realistic anatomy, I should say. But I think almost just as important as that is someone who, like, an artist that kind of does a lot of mechanical, technical details. And that's mainly for the mechs and ships. Like, I would think that, you know, bringing this back, you would keep you would keep some of the aspects of the original designs from the cartoons, but I think it would be a good idea to tweak some of them, you know, kind of update the look of some of the mech suits and stuff that they use in the ships. And, you know, this way, the more dramatic parts, like battles and, you know, the character interaction can have more of an impact than you would get with a slightly more cartoonish style. Maybe consider some of the guys who have done the G.I. Joe series, but I want to say D.D. Press? Yes, that is who I was thinking of. DDP, Devil's Due Press. Yeah, some of the artists from that, I think that would be a good fit, maybe. I don't know, I don't really have an artist in mind. I figure, you know, give that a wide berth. But I think the original writer of the show took a more serious approach. It was one of those stories that gave you a look at all the perspectives. And I think you would probably lose that in a movie that has to be like an hour, like, well, now these days, like, they can be 3 hours, but I don't know if you want to keep it going for 3 hours. I don't know, a good crafted story, 3 hour movie, it would probably, I don't know, I feel like they would have to kind of up the action a bit more than focus on the characters just to keep people's attention that long. So I don't know, I'm kind of iffy. Like, I'm not against the movie, but I'm kind of iffy on just the overall narrative being at its best that way. So with Able Squad, they get split up on multiple missions on Venus, Earth, and Mars, allowing the members to experience, you know, meet other characters and get into situations apart, kind of develop new dynamics, and then they grow separately, they come back together, blah, blah, blah. So you get space war battles with ships and mechs, you get espionage and intrigue, future history, politics, and military fiction, and you can produce that a bit faster than an animated show if you're doing a comic, and you'd have more creative freedom to explore the characters and situations, and I think readers would be able to get more invested in this universe that way. The original plan for the show's third season was to introduce an alien race that would force the humans or Terrans to join forces with the Neo Sapiens. So this new comic could start from there, then do issues that, like, I kind of don't like this idea, but I mean, if you're trying to really get the ball rolling and kind of push the newer stories as opposed to the story of the show, then you could do one of those things where it's like you start with the introduction of you take that story, you start with the introduction of this new alien race and the Neo Sapiens and humans joined together, and then through whatever character you're starting with, just be like, man, I remember when humans and Neo Sapiens were at war. And then you tell that story of the creation of the Neo Sapiens and then the revolt and the war. And then we get back to this. But I feel like that's something you probably do in a movie. And, you know, I've already said what I think about the whole movie idea. So I would honestly rather them start from the actual beginning. Start with the creation of the Neo Sapiens, their revolt, that war. And then you get to this, either this new race that was going to be in the third season, or maybe do something else. I think the series has potential, but I wouldn't drop everything to put together something like a TV show or a movie, because that's going to require a bigger budget, and you would almost have to do something like a comic, I would think, anyway, just to remind people of what this show, you know, what this actual thing is, and see if people even get excited about it. But I think you could just skip all that and just do a comic. Like, there's no commitment. You do a couple of issues. If it floats and people like it, then, you know, you keep going, like, keep telling that story. So if you can find clips of it or full episodes, you know, I would say check out the cartoon, see what you think. And the animation goes up and down in quality, but, you know, that's, you have to save the good animation for the bigger battles and important episodes. So it's kind of, you know, and there's 52 episodes, so they had to stretch that budget. So with this one, there's no trades, really, because I think maybe someone, you know, they were kind of lost of time, and I think maybe some mysterious collector maybe has however many issues were ever made and stored somewhere, collecting dust with the action figures. That's kind of it for Exo Squad. It's kind of one of those old shows that really stuck out as a cartoon for what it was, but then once it was done, that was it. No one really, I don't know, I guess no one really wanted it back. Or then again, we didn't really have the internet the same way we do now. So I'm sure maybe if it had come out today and then got canceled, there would be like fans going, hey, bring it back or whatever. But, you know, you'd think by now, considering our, you know, reboot kind of culture, someone would have called out for it before me, before now. Or maybe they have and I just haven't heard about it. I don't know. I think it's one of those shows, especially with the kind of, we're getting more. There's more sci-fi stuff, newer sci-fi stuff coming out, but the quality varies wildly, and I think this would be one of those good, this potentially, depending on who gets their hands on it, could be one of those breakout things that could really get, you know, sci-fi fans a little bit excited. So next up, and that's kind of it for Exo Squad. I didn't really have any new ideas for it, but it's just something I wanted to talk about. So next, I'm gonna this kind of double build episode. I'm going to talk about another old show that did have a comic called The Big Guy and Rusty, the Boy Robot.
So, most people probably remember the cartoon, if at all, with the giant robot Big Guy appearing first in Madman Comics in issues 6 and 7, which was published by Dark Horse. It's an offshoot of DC. He did not have a partner, Rusty, when he originally appeared, and that didn't happen until the two-issue miniseries in 1995 by Frank Miller and Geoff Darrow. Basically, Rusty is a take on Astro Boy. If you've seen any pictures of these or you've seen the cartoon, it's blatantly obvious. I mean, he doesn't look exactly like Astro Boy, but he looks like Astro Boy. But let's see. And oh, Big Guy. So Big Guy is an American giant robo with a human pilot inside. And the two team up to stop giant kaiju and other giant robots and aliens and just any kind of big monster or natural disaster. They basically just protect the world. Now, that's pretty much it. Pretty basic and short. The series, like I said, he had an appearance in a different comic for two issues, and then he had a two-issue miniseries, and that's pretty much it for the comics. So from here on going forward, I'll pretty much be talking about the cartoon like I did with the Cops episode, because that's where the meat of the, you know, characters and material is coming from anyway. So I'll get on to that. All right, so the cartoon. The cartoon ran on Fox Kids for 26 episodes back in 1999 till 2001. It featured the voice talents, or there's three recognizable voices in this show. I'll get to the third one a little bit later. Two of them are Pamela Adlon as the voice of Rusty the Boy Robot. Now, her you would recognize from King of the Hill, if you watch that show. She did the voice of Bobby Hill, Hank's son. And then if you watch the Disney cartoon Recess, she did the voice of Spinelli. I've seen both those shows, so I know her voice, and that's pretty cool. Actually, well, when I watched the show Big Guy and Rusty, I recognized her voice because I watched both of those two shows. Or at least Recess. I can't remember when King of the Hill was out. I'm pretty sure King of the Hill was out when Big Guy and Rusty was on TV. I'm not sure about Recess. I think that came later. But either way, I recognize her voice each time. It's very distinct. And then the other voice is Arlie Ermey, who does the voice of General Thornton. And then, of course, Arlie Ermey is, most recognized from his role in the movie Full Metal Jacket. I know him from that, but I think my favorite role that he's done is from the movie Saving Silverman, but that's just me. So, in the cartoon, Rusty is an AI robot with human emotions meant to replace the BGY-11, aka the Big Guy, which is the giant robot, basically giant robot mech suit, but it doesn't really fit like a suit. Like, there's a seat inside, so it's not like human size. It's gigantic. And his job is basically protecting Earth. The series is set in Neutronic City, which is a stand-in for New York. It's not said what era this story takes place in, like what year or anything. But, I mean, obviously, you know, there's robots and AI and stuff. But the look of the show kind of resembles the 1950s. Like, there's that kind of, like, 1950s vibe, but with high-tech stuff in it, too. It's kind of similar to what they did in the Batman animated series, where it looked like it was the 1950s, but then like there was sometimes magic, but then, well, magic can be at any time, but like, you know, Batman had his like high tech gear and stuff, but it was still like, it still looked like an early era, you know, everybody had Tommy guns and there was blimps and stuff. So it's kind of like that, kind of a vague, ambiguous kind of, time period, which I like. I think that would work. That worked to the benefit of the cartoon. Both shows, actually, Batman and this. But we're not talking about Batman. Now, with the BGY-11, it's piloted by Lieutenant Dwayne Hunter, and he is retiring. He's against retiring the Big Guy and letting the Boy Robot Rusty replace it. His argument is pretty valid, because basically, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Plus, Rusty hasn't been tested in the field at this point. Like, so at the start of the show, Big Guy is pretty much the tried and true protector of the Earth, and they bring in Rusty to replace him, even though Rusty is new. Like, he's never even been in battle before. They're just like, hey, it's a super smart robot, it can learn and blah blah blah, and it has like the mentality of a child, which I thought was a weird choice. Like, why would you? It's like, yeah, let's basically put a superpowered 10-year-old in charge of saving the city with no training, no experience. Yeah, that's a smart idea, scientist. Obviously, this objection puts him in conflict with Dr. Erica Slate from Quark Industries, who is the lead scientist who developed Rusty. With Rusty having essentially the mind of a child, but also being fully aware that he's a robot, he's pretty much idolized the Big Guy. Like, he's seen all of, you know, seen the video footage of his battles and newsreels and newspapers and blah, blah, blah. And he thinks that Big Guy is an artificial intelligent robot too. Like, he's an older, he's clearly sees him as like, he's older, but he's a robot like me that can think and move on its own. He doesn't know that Big Guy has to be piloted by someone. So of course they retire Big Guy. Rusty goes on his first mission and he can't hack it. So Big Guy has to be called back into action, and the government, Quark Industries and the government kind of team up on this one, decide, well, okay, you know, Big Guy technically is obsolete, and they do need to replace him eventually, but they can't just send this boy robot out there with no experience and just, you know, he already failed once. Even though he should be powerful enough to do it, he just doesn't have the experience. So Big Guy pretty much becomes a mentor for Rusty, and so his job is to keep protecting the Earth, train Rusty, so that Rusty can eventually take over and protect the Earth. Now, Lieutenant Hunter shows a little bit of heart by keeping up the charade that Big Guy is a self-aware robot. And he tells Rusty that he's just Big Guy's mechanic, even though he's really the pilot. Dr. Slate sees this, and she kind of, she sees this and then kind of realizes that maybe she misjudged Hunter. Lieutenant Hunter and Dr. Slate kind of start to form a friendship, and then eventually a romance towards like the kind of the, not the very tail end of the series, but like maybe about the halfway point, you start to get the hint that they're kind of interested in each other. And then from there on, it kind of, you know, it's blatantly stated, you know, they both go on a date and blah, blah, blah. And then Hunter clearly representing, you know, the good old fashioned grit of the past, and the doctor being an analog for, you know, new technology and change. By the end of the series, well, during the series and then at the end, obviously, but I feel like it's pretty obvious what they're going for. You know, it turns out that both are good. You know, you kind of can take from the past and still, you know, do new things in the future, and they work great together. So, you know, themes, aren't those great? I think as a whole, it's a good series. When I was putting this whole episode together, or, you know, thinking out what I was going to do for it, I did go back and watch a few episodes. You can tell it's dated. Like, the animation, you know, it's from, what, 1999 and to 2001. You can tell it's old. I don't think that works against it necessarily, but it's like, unless you really, really like this show, it holds up fine, but it's not something that I would like. I wouldn't go out and buy the DVD of it and rewatch it, you know? It's just one of those things like, oh yeah, I remember this. And watching a few episodes, I was like, yeah, I remember what I liked about it, and I still like those things about it. But like, man, it could that show could really use a tune-up dialogue-wise. Like, it feels like it's from 1990s, you know what I mean? I was gonna go down some of the villains, because there's quite a few, but like, it's mostly like a villain of the day kind of series for a bit. There is kind of a main plot going through, but 26 episodes, that's really just like a lot. There's a lot of villains, but they're kind of like one-shot villains, with the exception of the villain Dr. Nugog, who is voiced by Tim Curry, who you might know from Rocky Horror Picture Show, the movie Clue, Home Alone 2, he was a lead concierge. Ugh, that's a weird word to say. He was also the sludge pollution villain from Fern Gully. Yeah, lots of other movies. He was the big horn red guy from Legend. Look, I'm not going to go through his entire, movie history, but those are the ones I've seen. I've seen others too, but I'm not going to go through all of them. So Tim Curry was in it, and he was Dr. Nugog, who developed basically a clone of Big Guy that he called Bad Guy. Yeah, definitely from, the 1990s. This clone came with a computer replica of Lieutenant Hunter, and there was a two-part kind of episode thing going on where this replica tried to, take out the real Lieutenant Hunter, replace him, and blah, blah, blah. Eventually, Big Guy and Bad Guy fight. Good guys win. Hooray. So, what would a live-action incarnation of this be like? You've got basically giant robot versus anything you can think of, but just super big. The Big Guy fight, like I said, he fights aliens, other robots, giant monsters. I really feel like a concept artist could have a field day with the while in the development phase of any kind of movie for this. You could come up with new enemies, but I would think that you would definitely have to put Bad Guy in there. Like, that just seems like the obvious move. I would kind of like this series. I would kind of rather this be a one-shot movie than a franchise. I mean, you could do a franchise with this, but I feel like, I feel like it would kind of fall into the same hole that Pacific Rim did, where it's like the first movie was like pretty promising, and then, they do the second movie and it wasn't as good. So that's kind of my worry. So I would kind of rather it just be like a big one-shot movie where they do everything and that, and it just stands alone. Because, why not? You can do standalone movies, but, everybody wants a franchise, so it could work either way. It's a pretty simple setup. Like, you've got a cool, ambiguous kind of time period that can make this kind of a period piece movie, or at least make a cool aesthetic backdrop. Because, the focus is on the giant robot versus, whatever giant monster or whatever, or alien or whatever you're going to have them fight. But I think making the world feel like a real place is still important when you're telling a story. And I think this kind of, if you take a look at the cartoon, I think that kind of ambiguous era aesthetic could really work for a movie. And I think if you kind of went all out and really put in some effort to make it feel like a lived-in place, that would really kind of help the movie stand out from other, giant monster movies or whatever. Also, you've got, or one thing I'd like to see is that from the cartoon is them keeping the sound effects. Not all of them, but specifically the Big Guy robot has this move where he holds his arms up and his elbows open, and there's two giant Gatling guns in each of his elbows. And when he fires in the cartoon, it sounds like machine gun fire. Softened machine gun fire with the loud screech of an eagle over it. So kind of picture that. Like I said, if you can find an episode of the cartoon to watch, look it up on YouTube. It sounds pretty awesome. It's just and then I can't do a screech of an eagle, but just, imagine the screech of the continuous screech of an eagle over the sound of machine gun fire. It's pretty awesome. So if anything, if they did this, turned this to a live-action movie, please keep that in. And so you've got the aforementioned themes of, old versus new, and the importance of each. The idea of what a family is, as in Rusty finds one in the doctor, who's technically his mother, and with Lieutenant Hunter, but then also the Big Guy, who is technically Lieutenant Hunter. You could also do a slow burn and do a Netflix series. But if you do that, you really got to put the money in. You can't just, this isn't something you can shortchange. But I think, considering that there's already a cartoon series and it was 26 episodes, this really feels like a movie. If you're going to bring this back, it feels like it's either going to be a comic book or a movie. I wouldn't mind a comic book, but a movie would be pretty cool. Like I said, it's that sound effect for the machine guns. If it has to be a franchise, you can kind of spread the narrative with Dr. Slate and Hunter slowly becoming romantic with each other. You could also have Rusty eventually find out the truth about Big Guy, Lieutenant Hunter. And then, of course, you could have either in your first movie, you could introduce Dr. Nugog. And then in the third movie, you could have it be where he finally develops Bad Guy and they have a big fight. So, you know, there's options. I think it could work. Why not do it? So, yeah, like the cartoon, I still like, but like I said, I wouldn't go get it. You can probably YouTube some of the episodes or clips of it. But if you watched it when it originally aired and you still loved it, or you still like it, I do believe the series is on DVD. You could probably find it on Amazon, probably for cheap. Like I said, 26 episodes, so considering how old it is, I don't know, probably you can find it under $30. I'm not sure about the comic. Like I said, it's a 2-issue miniseries, so that seems like if you do find it, it's probably going to cost you, because whoever has it probably doesn't want to sell it. But, you know, it's probably out there somewhere. It's under Dark Horse, so maybe either... I know the DC streaming service also has comics on there that you can read online, and Dark Horse is a part of DC, so maybe you can find it there. Probably not. It's pretty obscure even for them, so who knows. So,
well, that's the show for this week. This week's episode was brought to you in part by my limited imagination, lack of sponsorship, and you, the one listener. You can fuel my manic rantings with comments and good ratings for the algorithm that, you know, puts my podcast somewhere on the list of podcasts. You feel free to email me at comicobscurapod@yahoo.com, and you can find the show on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and Anchor for your listening pleasure. I'm Tony. Thanks for listening. Until next time, don't be obscure.